You're listening to James Valentine on ABC Radio.
Lee Rydstrand joins us. He was a process engineer at Streets and involved with the invention of the Bubble-O Bill. Hello, Lee.
Hello, James.
Nice to have you along. Thanks for getting in touch.
Yeah, well, I'm usually asked the question every couple of years. What my involvement was, so I'm pretty much practicing telling the story.
So, well, people, I suppose it is intriguing. In my normal course of the day, I don't think of the processes of food as such, but of course, at some point, someone had to said there's a gap in the market for a head shaped ice cream. Or what was the creative process to start with?
Well, it's a good question, actually, James. Firstly, I'm not the creator of the product. I was just one part of a team. Streets is owned by Unilever, and at the time, Unilever was the biggest ice cream company in the world. They had branches in 84 countries, and their crack marketing teams from each of those branches would meet every year at an ice cream convention, and they'd swap their products and... In one particular year, our crack marketing team came back with Bubble-O Bill. Mm-hmm. Bubble-O Bill was an American product made by, I forget which particular company, let's blame Good Humour.
Okay.
And
is Good Humour the name of an ice cream company?
Yeah, it is.
Right.
It's quite a famous one in the States.
Right.
Only Americans can come up with those names.
Yeah.
And so in my role as the process engineer, I acquired the equipment that they used in the States. What I acquired was an extruder, which made Bubble-O Bill's face.
Yeah.
And a device which took the bubblegum balls and put it on his nose. And we went into trials and they failed.
Really? So what, the nose fell off, or just that's a really ugly looking Bubble-O Bill, or what happened?
Can you believe it? The American machine was designed for a particular size bubblegum ball, and we had our local suppliers, which I can happily name because they belong to the opposition now. Mm. They're called Allens.
Yep.
They were incapable of making a ball round enough and with a consistent size that would work in this machine. It was jammed up within minutes.
Right, right. It's a bit, because it's a precision engineering process, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. When we finally got it running, we were making 120 a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to build a machine that could punch a ball right on the middle of Bubble-O Bill's nose 120 times a minute, which is for 8 hours at a time.
So, right.
Mean feat of engineering.
So take a step back. You may not know the specifics of this, but sort of in general, if you were the inventor of the Bubble-O Bill, would it normally have been that they might say, we feel like we need something that's fun that kids will like, or would it might be that someone says, do you know what, I think I've figured out how to stick a gumball on an ice cream. What could we do with that?
It works both ways. In this particular case, the marketing team, they have a range of price points that they want to fill. They worked out that the typical kid in 1983 had about 40 cents in their pocket, and they could spend that on an ice cream. So the target is to make an ice cream that they could sell for 40 cents.
Right, right.
That I think it might have been a bit cheaper at the time.
That a kid is going to want. That is, say, an 8-year-old is going to go, oh, awesome, yep. I get ice cream and bubble gum.
And they actually come up with half a dozen concepts, which are then test. We make, we have a development team which would make samples of different shapes, so frogs and dinosaurs and sharks and other things and different flavour combinations, and then we put them in front of kids and then we end up with the one they want.
Yeah, right, right.
So we make that, yeah.
And probably it's rarely the one that you're all sitting there going, lime dinosaurs are going to be the killer, and they all go with the banana shark.
Well, that's right. I mean, in the time that I was there, the first product I worked on was Bigfoot.
Right.
People may remember a banana-flavoured foot with a chocolate sole.
Mm-hmm.
That came from another country, and we put a strap across the top, I think, to make it into a thong.
Right.
But that
Were they made of jelly snakes or something like that? Did you?
No. That was a simple one. But the ice cream itself, the banana ice cream, had a lot of gelatin in it, so it's very marshmallowy. And that leads to an interesting story, because in production, when we start up, it takes a while to get stable in production. So we end up with a lot of buckets of failed ice cream,
right,
which we have to do something with. And in the ice cream industry, it gets remixed into another product. And the target product is chocolate paddle pops, because chocolate covers virtually any flavour.
Right, right. Is that where that's where that myth comes from, which is true. Like, kids will say things like, they'll either say things like, rainbow paddle pops are just all the stuff that was left over, or chocolate paddle pops are made from anything, that sort of thing.
Well, actually, what happened in that year with the banana flavour going into it, the sales of chocolate paddle pops spiked. And our crack marketing team said, oh, why is that? So they went through and tested the chocolate paddle pops against a bunch of kids, and the kids have come back saying, I really like chocolate paddle pops, because you never really know what flavour is going to be in it.
Right.
Because some years we're making peppermint products as well, and they go into chocolate, and once we put licorice in, which is hard to cover.
Yep.
So, and then one kid famously said, oh, I really like this year's chocolate paddle pop, because I can suck it into a point.
Right.
because of all the gelatin from the banana. And so the crack marketing team said, wow. And then they reformulated the chocolate paddle pops to have those characteristics.
So then so now it will usually go into a point, but also is there a randomness to the flavouring of the chocolate paddle pop?
Oh, there always will be. Yeah.
There always will be.
You look at the other products which are being made in any one year, and as I said, the one year I think we were producing three products with peppermint in it.
Yeah.
So the chocolate paddle pops took on a peppermint note.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
That's amazing. Like, because you tend to think of, if it's an adult product, you have to be rigid about the formula because we will notice, but the kids will kind of go, it's sugary and chocolatey, minty. I don't care.
Well, I mean, you were talking before about what it is how they work out what product kids will get, and kids are visual as well as gustatory, right? So how it looks is important. How it feels when they eat it matters, and all taste also matters. But in the midst of that is, what is the current interests in the world? And kids are always interested in dinosaurs, or you know, if there's been shark attacks, they're interested in sharks. Or, you know, if I think at the time Toy Story came out, so, you know, there's this linking with Toy Story, that sort of stuff. So, you know, the marketing team's always looking at what kids are interested in at the time, and it'll end up being a product one way or another.
We're talking to Lee Rydstrand, who was one of the process engineers at Streets with the Bubble-O, when the Bubble-O Bill was brought in, you know, getting some insights into how these sort of processes worked. You're talking about a lot of these products being shared around the world from, you know, various countries. What have we contributed to the world of ice creams? What has Australia contributed?
I can't say that we have contributed anything, really.
Really?
I mean, when Streets was acquired by Unilever, I don't know what year it was, probably in the 60s or 70s. Streets at the time was famous for the chocolate heart. And I think they were also making Gay Times. Yeah. They were products which Unilever acquired. And I don't know if they went overseas. But generally, all of the novelty products, and I have to say, Bubble-O Bill was expected to last 1 year.
Really?
Yep, these are fad products, and they come and go every year. So every year I was working on a new fad product, and I was halfway into the development process for its replacement, which was going to be Fredo Frog,
right,
with Smarties for its eyes, and you know, inserting Smarties two Smarties on a frog at once.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting feat.
Yeah.
And
is that a particularly challenging engineering feat, to get two Smarties in the same spot on a Fredo Frog ice cream?
Well, the hard part is not so much placing them on the eyes. It's actually, you imagine you've got a hopper full of the Smarties, and they've got to be fed neatly into place before they get punched onto the ice cream.
Right.
So the change between the machine that I acquired from the Americans and the one that I end up building was that in order to cope with the differences in size of the balls, I had to have a rubber sheet with a hole punched in it, smaller than the smallest ball, and then an air piston would force it through that hole, stretching the rubber sheet and it would pop out. So I could cope with, you know, wide variations in size and shape of the ball. Right. But with Smarties, they sort of come down in a particular orientation.
Yeah,
which is,
a lot harder.
Requires more effort.
So we have been innovative in the ice cream world, but perhaps the Americans, you know, couldn't see a Golden Gay Time as something they wanted. Or the limes. Is the lime splice hours? That was my favourite pretty much when I was when a kid.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of the street's favourites. I think they exist elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
So I can't even claim that to be an Australian. Wow. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I suppose we can be proud of those ones that are, but I think we've got a more sophisticated taste than many parts of the world who perhaps can't deal with the sort of ice creams that we enjoy.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Where have you ended up, Lee? Where do you work now?
I work, as many people do, in IT.
Yeah.
The ice cream portion of my career is probably, I regard it as the highlight. It certainly was the most intensely creative.
Yeah.
It had all the ingredients that a young engineer would really fall for. I have to say, at the time when I was there, it was the golden period for streets as well, because they were the top brand. Mm. The other brands were, you know, distant seconds. And it wasn't until Cadbury's got annoyed with streets making chocolate bars as ice creams that they decided to make their own ice cream, and the competition became quite intense.
Right.
But I'd left by the time that happened. And so I saw Streets bringing out a string of really, really creative ice creams compared to what we were used to. And I was involved in the making of them. So that was, you know, I have to say at this stage, you know, the team of people at Streets when I was there was just wonderful.
Yeah,
they had some old people who had been there when Streets was in its original form, who were legends in their own lifetime there. And as an engineer, I'm talking now to people who have kids who want to become engineers. It's a shame now that you can't take your kid to a factory like Streets and have that kid watch the processes. It's now virtually impossible to get into any factory these days because of occupational health and safety.
Yeah, right.
I really don't know how kids learn about the magic of manufacturing and process engineering, which is what ends up, I mean, my son is going to become, you know, after watching endless repeats of Madman and Gruen transfer, now into advertising and marketing, you know.
If only he'd seen a whole bunch of things extruding stuff and picking them up and heating them and cooking them and chopping them, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I did with my father, he was a salesman, and we visited glass factories and shoe factories and foundries. We saw all the things in manufacturing which sadly is disappearing from the Australian landscape.
Yeah.
And I do wish there was a way we could find to get young kids that exposure so they can see something worthwhile that they can do with their hands.
Yeah, yeah. Lee, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you, James.
You're listening to James Valentine on ABC Radio.